Feeling heard and understood allows children to release the feelings, let go, and move on. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shitshows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea, and I am a total shitshow. A couple things. Number one, did anybody do Flat Stanley when they were growing up? I was recently at my parents' house and looking at some stuff from my childhood, and I found my old Flat Stanley stuff. So this was a book. And it was about this boy who, I mean, it's actually quite tragic. He like gets smushed by, I swear it was like a cement roller. Like he gets rolled over by a cement roller and becomes paper thin, but somehow still survives. And then what we would do is you'd, you know, make a little Flat Stanley. And then you would send them to various people on vacation. You would send them away to like your aunt, your uncle or whatever. And then they were supposed to like take pictures with Flat Stanley and write a little book and send it back. So I'm curious if anybody did Flat Stanley. The second thing I just want to say is that if you listen to the episode on this past shit show Saturday, I talked about how Kiki was not doing well. Kiki is my cat. She's doing so much better. She's eating. She wasn't eating for several days. So she's doing a lot better. My old lady is going to kick it with me for a few more days. I think that's all I have for my beginning notes for now. So today we are diving deep with Janet Lansbury. So Janet is a parenting expert and educator. She's the author of Elevating Childcare, A Guide to Respectful Parenting, as well as No Bad Kids, Toddler Discipline Without Shame. She has an online course, the No Bad Kids Master Course, which offers everything parents need to know about children's behavior and the notion of discipline as an act of love and compassion. Wouldn't that be nice, folks? Wouldn't that be nice if we had experienced that? And she also has taught RIE parenting classes for over 20 years. So RIE stands for Resources for Infant Educarers, not educators, educarers, which is a parenting philosophy that was created by Janet's guru, teacher, Yoda, child and infant specialist Magda Gerber. And so this philosophy of educarer or educaring is a method that treats a child, and in particular infants, as an individual and not an object. Another, what a concept, folks. So she is also the host of the podcast, Unruffled. Janet was initially recommended to me by fellow Shit Show member, Nicole. Nicole, did you know, I think I've told you this before, did you know that I have you in my phone as Nicole Cowgirl? Yes, I do. So Nicole mentioned Janet to me, said that she had saved her ass in parenting. And then I started diving into Janet's stuff, read her books, listened to a ton of her podcasts. And this parenting thing is a big topic for a lot of us adult children. I myself am not a parent, but I know that it is romance and child rearing. That's probably not a Janet approved term, child rearing. It sounds like we're raising cattle. This is where it shows up for a lot of people. For a lot of people, when they have kids, all of this shit comes up. And I wanted to bring up two specific types of grief that T.N. Dayton talks about a lot as it relates to adult children of alcoholic and dysfunctional families and the parenting process. So one of them is parental inner child grief. So it's, she says, this happens to parents who don't want to repeat the past, but don't fully understand how to identify and validate the grief of their own inner child. You feel that you are giving to your child what you never got. If you're a parent and you haven't done your own work and processed your own childhood wounds, the neediness of your child can act as a trigger for your own unmet childhood needs. You need to attend to the wounds of your inner child so that you can gain some relief and healing and stop feeling as if you are giving from an empty well. And the other type of grief that she brings up is age correspondence reaction. This is another grief reaction that happens to parents, and understanding it can be very liberating. When your child hits the age of a time in your life when you were traumatized, your unconscious pain from that time may get triggered. Then you will tend to make your pain from the past about your present. As the parent, you may go to one extreme or the other. You may experience extra worry and anxiety for your child and want to overprotect them because the child and you felt underprotected and unsafe, or you may want to distance from your child because the child in you wants to go numb and avoid feeling that old wound. So I'm going to have this Shit Show Saturday. I'm going to have two moms that are in the Shit Show community talk about what this process of healing their complex PTSD, the ways in which this has showed up in their role as a parent and what they've been doing about it. There is some huge healing, huge growth that is going on within the Shit Show community as it relates to parenting, because this stuff is really hard and people behave in ways that they feel a lot of shame about. But as I mentioned to Janet in this episode, it's like we have to talk about it, right? Like we have to normalize talking about this stuff because it's not happening in isolation. It's not just you. There are a bunch of parents out there who are really struggling when it comes to this this child rearing. So I'm going to have this upcoming Shit Show Saturday, have them share their experience. But I was asking one of them a couple weeks ago, I said, are there any books that are really just targeted on complex PTSD and parenting? Like, are there any resources that are just solely focused on this? So I don't know if anyone's looking to write a book. This might be a nice little gap in the market, a nice little hole in the market. So I'm talking to Janet about hitting her mother bottom, I guess you could call it, where, you know, she had a child. She felt like she had no damn clue what she was doing, was scared to voice that, and finally got to a place where she was in, you know, so much pain that she was willing to reach out and get the help that she needed, which ultimately led to her being just this powerhouse, this healing force for so many parents out there. The other thing too is that, as I said, I've been reading her books, I listened to podcasts, and I couldn't really find much about her childhood in there. Like, there's a couple episodes that were on trauma, and I'm scouring through everything, and then I find this one quote, how it took her a long time to be able to acknowledge and say out loud the parts of her childhood that weren't so great, and the, you know, the wounding that resulted from that in adulthood. So I brought this quote to her and I get her to share. I am the vulnerability whisperer, folks. And even if you're not a parent, you're going to get a whole hell of a lot out of this episode. So let's get on with the damn thing. Oh, I wanted to say that she just recently interviewed Gabor Mate. So somebody in the Shit Show one time like referred to him as Gaber Matey. I don't know if you were joking or not, Scott, but Gaber Matey, which goes along with the whole like Shit Show pirate theme, right? And so I told her about that before we started to actually record the interview. So you're going to hear me refer to him as Gaber Matey. And I just wanted to let you know that, like, I don't think that that's actually how you pronounce his name. So just letting you know. All right, let's get the damn show on the road. But first, a few things. Damn the Join Shit Show. This is my online support community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. This is also where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are on this damn journey to heal. And I just want to give a huge plug to the Shit Show parenting space that is in this community on the app. And this shit is hard. This shit is really, really, really hard. And for example, like there's somebody, a dad reached out to me last night. He's really going through a hard time and I don't have any kids, you know? And I just said, put it in the community, put it in the chat. I'm sure that there are people in here who have gone through this experience. And what do you know? There are. So whatever it is that you're going through, whether it's parenting or romance or narcissists or you name it, there is somebody in this community that can relate to your experience. And as I say always, this is a no judgment, shame-free zone. This is a safe place for you to come as you are, share your shit, and we're going to love you through it and also help you laugh a little bit too. So go see the show notes for a link to Damn the Join Shit Show. Yes, you. Next, I have the Shit Show Nation newsletter. I just sent out a video newsletter this past week on reparenting and about a real-time experience that I had this weekend where I kind of went into a trauma response and I was able to do some reparenting and work through this issue. So see the link in the show notes for that as well. I'm going to add in one more request, folks, because you got to ask. We're also learning how to be assertive here too. Take a damn screenshot of this episode right now that you're listening to, and could you send it to one person that you think would benefit from this episode? Okay, if you're not going to damn the Join Shit Show for now, could you at least take a damn screenshot and send it to a fellow parent or whomever that you think would benefit from listening to this episode? Do you realize how much of a damn difference it would make if every single one of you just sent this to one person? I mean, shit, we can have the whole world healed in no time. Okay, last two things, getting a little greedy here. You know what I'm gonna say. Give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. It's required here. Thanks, love you all. All right, folks, you're in for a damn treat. We have Janet Lansbury. Welcome to Adult Child.
Thank you.
Are you familiar with this term?
Well, only in regard to, Adult Children of Alcoholics is the first thing that comes to mind, mm-hmm. but is yeah. that?
So yeah. So initially it was Adult Children of Alcoholics, and now it's just Adult Children of Alcoholic and Dysfunctional Families. So it was only about like 10 years after they came up with the term in the late 70s that they realized that there are so many different types of dysfunctional families that could produce an adult child with like the same set of characteristics.
That's great that you're speaking about that and supporting this very large, I can imagine, community.
Very large. So many people have no clue that that's what's going on. And I'm sure that you get that a lot in people that are reaching out to you, which we can dive into some. But yeah, I mean, I always knew that my childhood was not great, but I didn't have any idea that like I was suffering from complex PTSD. And there are a shitload of people out there who also have no idea. So my hope is just to reach as many of them as possible. You know, we shared one guest, which is Alwyn.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, what was your listenership's reaction to that episode? Because she has a very, very heavy, dark story.
Only positive, huge positive. A lot of people listened to it. It was one of the top listened to podcasts that I had. I think people related to it. I think people loved hearing that side of what I do, because I get very focused on how can I help you with this or that issue. And for a lot of people, that's super helpful. For other people, this seems impossible. So she was very much able to represent and speak to those people who I want to do this so badly. And it sounds like the right thing. And I love it. And I keep trying and I keep failing. And, you know, I don't have the background to specifically address those issues. For me, the issues that I had and I still have, and I'm still processing things that happened to me as a child. And because I think that's part of, I don't know, just being more aware as a person and growing yourself and healing yourself. And it's always a process. But for me, embracing this whole philosophy that I learned and practicing it was very healing in itself. But I feel like if my concerns had been more capital T trauma, or, you know, that Alwyn had incredible
Abuse. Yeah.
And another person I've had on my podcast several times who I adore is Elizabeth Corey. I don't know if you're
familiar. I've listened to some of her episodes. Yeah. I would love to have her on mine.
Yeah. So she's another one that just, you know, you can't even, for me, like, you can't even really go there. It's so heavy what you've been through. So there are people even with less than that, that need more support. They need to, you know, if they want to embrace what I teach, they have to maybe
deal with their own shit,
go to therapy or go to, you know, listen to someone, people like you, get that support. And that is, I'm all for that. I mean, anything that we do because we want to care for children better or care for the world better, or just live our lives in the best way possible, is that's what it's about.
Yeah. I mean, it's so common, and so many people in my community, you know, this shit comes up through romantic relationships and in parenting. And so many people, as soon as they have kids, all of that shit bubbles up to the surface, you know? So Alwyn, yeah, her being so honest, and just especially about being, you know, violent with her kids. I mean, I think that the amount of shame that that releases for so many other parents out there who are doing the same thing, and they don't want to say it out loud. And so I just think it's amazing people like her that are willing to go there, because this is a real thing that happens, you know, and we can't really do anything about it unless people are willing to acknowledge it and talk about it.
Right. And I feel like even if we're not acting on those feelings, a lot of us suddenly have them when we have a child, suddenly with that baby's crying and incessantly, and you're just trying to get 5 minutes to go take care of yourself without the baby crying, and you're trying everything and you're just throwing your hands up. And you can see how people go to abusive places. Like, that was the first time I could ever understand that, just feeling it in myself, feeling the stress of all of that, and just the part of you that just wants to explode and, you know, feel so, and you can feel ashamed for even thinking about that, much less doing it. You know, so yeah, it's huge. And the more I think people can bring that out and put it out there as really a version of quote normal, the better for all concerned.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to specifically ask how people related to that episode, and just in general, when you've had, you just mentioned Elizabeth, you've had on Jean Chang. Is it? I was just wondering, for the episodes that you have that are more trauma related, I was thinking it's either going to go like one of two ways. Either people are going to be like eating that shit up, or is it too uncomfortable that people don't want to go there? Because I've noticed for me, like, any issues on like money wounds, money trauma, people don't want, like, I notice a big dip down, and it's because it's too scary. People don't want to go there. So I've noticed, are there any topics that you think are particularly scary for listeners, or you've noticed that not as many people listen to it?
Why is money? I'm just curious about that.
It's so deeply rooted. It's the scariest thing for me too. Just the deeply tied to, you know, our issues with money. Like, there's so much shame there. You know, it's tied to all of our needs, both physical and emotional. And I know for me, it was very, very charged in my family. It's the one thing I will tell you about my alcoholism. I will tell you about my issues within romantic relationships. I don't want to talk about how I've had issues with money. Like, there is some deep, deep shame there that comes up for me. And then I also know I just did an episode on clutter. And it's kind of, that's a similar thing too. A few people in my community are like, I can't listen to that episode yet. It's just a little too touchy.
So interesting to me. Yeah, it would seem that those are the sort of superficial.
But they're not.
That's interesting.
Very deeply tied, deeply rooted.
For me, I feel like those powerful issues are very, very welcome. I'm trying to think of something that isn't. So I did get some feedback from, well, one thing that happens to me is no matter what I post, is there's a certain amount of, there are people that I understand that are actually more in my generation than the parents I'm working with that are grandparents. Mm-hmm. And they're children, they don't obviously have a good relationship with their children, but what they're seeing, what they're reporting to me, what they're giving me hate mail about even, and reviews and all that stuff, is that their child is not including them in childcare with their grandchild as much as they would like to be. Sometimes they feel very criticized, shamed, they feel pushed aside and estranged from their children. And what I hear when I get that feedback is basically whatever you're doing is terrible. What are your credentials? You're ruining my relationship with my grandchildren. One of them even said recently, I wish you would just go away. And what I see behind that is this incredible hurt. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not a saint that I...
And always... maybe some guilt.
Guilt, exactly. Yes. And of course, there's a part of me that also wants to say, well, what happened with you and your children that this is happening? But I don't, because I feel for them. I feel how awful
it wouldn't
that...
be received anyways.
It wouldn't
probably
be
received. Not.
Yeah, no, because they're angry and yeah, they're feeling all the things. And that's where sometimes things I share are not welcome. I remember I think it was Jean that somebody said, repressed memories are bad science or something like that, or they are true or something like that. But no, I think for the most part, parents, because I do share a lot about the problem solving and the things that people could try to do if they were in the frame of mind to be able to do it, that I think when people hear those other sides, there's a lot of relief. And I've never had anyone that seemed to push against that as mm-hmm. a parent.
Yeah. You know, my experience is that I was scapegoated at a young age. So my mom was an alcoholic, only child. Dad worked a lot. I found out my mom was an alcoholic very young, and I was parentified and heavily involved and developed separation anxiety with my mom at 9 and couldn't go to sleepovers and had to sleep in her bed at night. And then they ended up sending me to a therapist. And years later, I asked my mom, I said, did you ever tell that therapist that you were an alcoholic and that you and dad fought all the time? And her response was, no, that didn't seem relevant. So hardcore scapegoated, identified patient. And I just think a lot of the times, I mean, I even had somebody in my community mention, like, I think a lot of times in these situations, like, granted, I needed therapy, there were issues. But if we could weigh who really needed the therapy, if there were limited financial resources, which there weren't, but if there were, it would have been more beneficial for my parents to be in therapy than for me to be. And I'm just wondering, how much are you seeing that in letters that you're receiving from parents, where there is sort of a scapegoatiness to it as far as making the child the problem, when really it should be, you know, the parent, you know, kind of picking up the mirror and looking at themselves? And how do you handle that? Because I think that there's a lot of that going on.
Yes, I feel like my audience generally isn't
in that
direction, but a certain element maybe. But yes, I hear more. I can't even remember. I think I brought it up in my interview that got cut out, but we cut this part out in when I was talking to Gabor Mate.
Gabor Mate, yeah.
Yeah, that there's some new labels that I've never even heard of before going around about kids, where that I put up I reposted an article I'd written a while ago about children that were acting very willfully and how to handle that. And these people were commenting, I think it was on Facebook, oh, clearly that's da-da-da-da-da, and I can't remember what it is, mm-hmm. that it's some label like the bossy child syndrome or something. I can't remember what it was called, but that there's a label for
all these
children like
now.
This. And I only wonder, because I'm against labels around children generally. I think they put blinders on us instead of helping us to see what's really going on, because it is a relationship issue often. It is about how we're navigating the relationship. And that's just a distraction to say, well, I'm going to categorize this, even, mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to be unpopular for me to say, but even this highly sensitive child label that's given, which I'm sure I was a highly sensitive child. At least one of my children of three, I would say, is a high, you know, if you had to qualify, but why not treat all children with sensitivity? Why not? To me, it doesn't make sense to say, here's this box that you treat them this way and you treat these children that way. No, you meet the child where they are, wherever they are, and everybody's a range of things. Nobody's just this and just that. And, you know, what percentage of you has to be sensitive for you to be in that box? I feel it's very unhelpful and I don't believe in it. I think you want to engage with each child as an individual and you'll be sensitive and open to all of them as to what they need and listening to what they're showing you, listening, noticing their behavior and what it means, and not saying, well, this is that kind of child, so you do this whole, this is a how-to for that type of child. I don't, I'm not into that.
So when you reflect back on your journey of parenting, and I don't know if you would refer to it as almost like hitting bottom, but like, I need help. I don't know how I'm doing. I'd love to hear that story. And specifically, if now you reflect back on it any differently, like if your perspective has changed at all as far as like what you were going through.
Yes. So I had this idea that, just having kind of been a insecure person that didn't feel very confident about things. I mean, good relationship with my mother generally, but there were things that were shaming and a lot of internalized shame and blah, blah, blah. And I came to parenting thinking, you know, I'd already been an actress and a model and been in that world, which is tough for a sensitive person. As my acting teacher used to say, you need the heart of a baby and the hide of an elephant to survive in that business. And I never really had, I've never felt conviction in my talent. So that made it hard, that I never quite felt like these are the shoes I'm supposed to be wearing. This job is for me. Whereas people I know who do have that, they can survive the ups and downs much more readily. But for me, it was kind of like, I almost fell into this. I don't really know how to get out of this. And I was basing my whole self-worth on it, as people do.
Yeah.
And so I'd been sort of rocked around in that whole thing. And then having a child, I still didn't, with my first one, give up that I'm not going to do that work anymore. That came with the second one. Then I finally felt, because now I already had this whole philosophy I was into, and just not that I ever thought I would make it a career, but that it just kind of gave me permission to finally get rid of that old identity. But when I did finally get married and have my first baby, I thought in my mind, I didn't really know I was thinking this until it happened, but I'd really expected that this was going to be an answer for me, that this was going to be something that was for me, that I was loving. It was one thing that I always looked forward to in my darkest days. I went through, gone through major depression. I was an addict in my 20s, all of that stuff. And I thought, this is it. This is the one thing that I've looked forward to as being the time of my life, or just when I was going to feel good about myself.
Yeah.
So with all that expectation, and then also getting at that time, this is the 90s, and at that time, there were sort of two camps. There was instinct. You just go with your instinct. Don't listen to anybody. They don't know. You know. Just do what you feel, and you know how to take care of a baby. And then the other one was stimulation. You could actually create a super baby if you stimulate them, their brains, they're so absorbent, and do all this stuff. And so I felt pressured by that one, and also pressured by the other one, because I didn't feel, my instincts weren't going, okay, this is what you do.
Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Right. What happened to my instincts? They didn't come in with my milk or whatever. So, you know, obviously I had some, but I realized also then that I'm not a good person with, it's not really clutter, but I'm not a person that mm-hmm. can handle chaos or too much novelty. Mm-hmm. I really like my habits. I like to know what's going to happen. I like a lot of clarity. And I didn't have any clarity about, I knew the obvious things. You feed the baby, you help the baby go to sleep, and you burp the baby. And you hold them a lot. They need that. You help them when they're crying. But I didn't know, I didn't really have a real plan, a structure in place for myself in this time of total novelty and mm-hmm. chaotic feelings. And, you know, it's just it's an emotional transition mm-hmm. that everybody has that isn't really considered enough. I think it's people consider, oh, now you have a baby, you're never going to sleep, blah, 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 blah. But not your whole life has changed in that now you are responsible for this whole other human being. And you never thought you were that selfish, but you really find out that you were in maybe a positive way, that your life was about you and now it's not about you. And that's just a huge emotional transition on top of everything else. So I had all of that. And then I didn't have an idea, a structure of what I really need to do and how I should try to help it go. And so I was just kind of riding along with, and then overstimulating my baby like crazy because I'm trying to stimulate her, and babies actually get overstimulated so easily. And we have to be careful about overstimulation. Never learned that until I met Magda Gerber. So she was crying, having these crying jags in the afternoon as babies do, but maybe more so because she was just not getting a chance to like air it out on her, just think and be and breathe. And there was always sort of something in her face, me in her face, a toy that made noises in her face, music in her face. So anyway, and that was of course exhausting for me too, because on top of everything else, now I'm trying to entertain her all day. So then I had panic attacks. I remember this feeling of my mother or my husband being home, and he was working long hours in those days. So he wouldn't get home until she was already asleep. And then I would almost want to say, don't even bother coming home. It's all done. You're no help to me now. But if he was there helping with childcare, or if my mother was, then I remember this feeling of, it's okay now, but they're going to leave. Mm-hmm. And then it's just going to be me. Yeah. Mm. And I can't do it. And it was such fear that I couldn't even enjoy any rest mm-hmm. with them being there, because I was waiting for they're going to leave, and then I'm going to be alone with the baby again. And I don't know what I'm doing. So I had panic attacks, which I hadn't had since, well, now I'm in my 30s and early 30s. And it had been at least 5 years since I'd had one. And so I'm back there again. I don't even know if depressed is the word. I was just totally overwhelmed and anxious and hating on myself so much, just hating, hating, hating on myself. All the self-loathing that I thought I had worked healed through. Mm-hmm. came mm-hmm. back, and just, it was like right back where I had left off. You know, it didn't just ease back in. It was all the way back. So yeah, I didn't know how I was going to get through this, and then couldn't tell anyone. I mean, I remember somebody, and I mentioned this in my book that I'm writing right now. An acquaintance I ended up with somewhere, I can't remember why, and she said, don't you just love being a mom like that? And the way she said it, I had such shame. And I said, yeah, sure. But that wasn't what I was thinking. I was thinking, my baby's great. I don't love being a mom. I can't be a mom. I suck. Mm. And this is really painful and awful. So
yeah, I was going to ask, were you open with your husband, or did anybody know how much you were struggling at the time?
I don't think so. No, I really
all
wasn't.
All in.
I thought because that whole thing of the shoulds, like you shouldn't feel like this. You're supposed to feel so happy now. And this is great. And there were little moments, of course.
The shame on top of the shame.
Exactly. You shouldn't be feeling what you're feeling, which is so often that message we give children, right? Like, calm down, stop it. What are you doing? You know, don't, not only do you feel this way, but you shouldn't feel this way. Mm-hmm. So you should feel doubly bad that you feel that way. Yes. So all of that. And no, I couldn't really, I was too ashamed to tell anyone. So I didn't. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's what a lot of people do. I just tried to muddle through and, you know, it started getting a little better maybe when she was 3 months. I also, on top of this, had like a medical issue going on where I had a retained placenta and nobody knew it. So, I mean, this is another thing to sort of adding to my feelings was that hormonally my body thought I was still pregnant because no, these doctors that I never went back to
figure it out.
Needless to say, I never went back to, they didn't figure it out. And I kept calling and saying, I'm bleeding a lot, like still, oh, that's normal for, and you know, I'm getting kind of, when I finally went back in for a check, I said, I kind of feeling pretty down. Like I'm not feeling good. Like, oh, that's just normal, you know, baby blues. They were a bunch of men, I had to say. From that point on, with my other two, I went to female doctors. Not that it's the men that was the problem, but it was this group of men where you didn't even know which one you were going to get when you had a baby. Like, I don't know why I ever went with them. And the one I got was late, and he, you know, and then he's like yanking at my placenta and left some in there. So they didn't find out till like 11 weeks later. They did. They left a good amount in there. Because then 11 weeks later, I finally went in and said, look, I'm still hemorrhaging and I still feel awful. And so one of the doctors, probably the best one in that team, was the one that I was seeing that day. And he said, oh, let's do an ultrasound. And then they found, he said, you know, it's calcified. It's the size of a golf ball. And they said, we're going to take it out and do it all. And of course, all for free. Because I mean, I could have sued them. I didn't want to have that around my baby issue. You know, I didn't want to have that negativity. So I didn't, but it was pretty, I could have been unable to have another child. You know, it was.
Were they apologetic?
Yes, he was. Not the guy that actually did it, but the doctor that was the one that
removed it. Yeah.
Was concerned, very, very concerned, you know, so they got me in right away. Blah, blah. So anyway, that's just to say that I had that as well. So maybe that made everything worse, but I think I still would have had a lot of the feelings. And yeah, then I just happened to read something in a little local magazine, LA Parent, this little free magazine. And it was a quote from Magda Gerber in an article about creativity, children raising a creative child. And it just stuck with me because it was so different. And she seemed to be quite sure of herself. And she said, take the mobile off their bed, take care of their needs and leave them alone. And she didn't mean leave them alone, like abandon them. She meant you don't need to get in their face and be
micromanaging. Yeah.
But I didn't know exactly what that meant. I just knew this is absolutely different from everything I've been doing. And I'm interested. So the randomness of that led to me going to a class and then eventually getting to study with her and having this bond with her and just changing my life in so many different ways has been one of the impetuses for me to share the way I do, which has been since 2009, I've been just writing articles, putting it out there, podcast. It's all, yes, I have ads on the podcast now, so I do get some money, but it's been like a free, you know, just so somebody might find it the way that I needed to find it. And maybe it would be the thing that helped. So yeah, that led to reading one sentence from her led to...
How old was your baby at that point?
She was only 3 months when I went to the first class. But I read the thing and then I sort of saved it and I couldn't get around. There was a phone number for Magda Gerber and Rye in the back. And it took me a couple of weeks at least to get around to contacting her. And then I think she was 3.5 months when I took her to the first class. And it was a class where you just, the teacher, who's Harry Grepler, she also shares now online a lot. She's a wonderful teacher, still teaching. She said, just lie your baby down right here. Just sit right next to her. You know, wait till she's ready. Give her a chance. Like, hold her in your arms. And then when you think she might be ready, just gently lie her down on this blanket on the floor and observe. And I did that. And in that class, it didn't happen as long again, but in that class, it was 2 hours of her being awake, totally content, looking around, not a peep out of her, and just blew my mind completely that there was a person there. I could see this person I'd never seen before with her own thoughts and her own interests and her own needing her own space from me. What was I doing? And so I just wanted to recreate that in any way that I could. And the class helped you know how and how to give full attention when they really need it, which is when you're caring for them, because that's something that you're doing together. And people don't think, I didn't think of this before. I thought you distract the baby. Here, look at this toy while I'm changing your diaper. Well, if you consider that a gynecological appointment where a doctor would be saying, oh, look over here. Don't notice what I'm doing. Watch this show. Mm-hmm. You wonder what we're thinking, but we're not thinking that's a person. So that's the issue.
That's amazing. So I want to read you a quote of yours. Okay. Yeah. So I think this is from 2022. And this is what you say. One of the challenges I know, and I can relate to this myself, is that a lot of us had really wonderful parents in a lot of ways. Whatever their faults might have been, it's so hard for us to blame our parents. I think for anything, a lot of us, we take it on ourselves. It's my thing. This is my problem. It wasn't to do with my parents. It was just me. I was bad in these ways, or I was wrong, or I had shameful feelings. And you said it, you know, it took me, I mean, a really long time, late into middle age, to even be open to seeing it. You said, oh, I love this quote. One of the most common responses the therapist hears from clients when a wound is named in therapy is, it's not that big of a deal. It's not as bad as what other people have gone through. I mean, that's how I felt about things I went through. I had a great relationship with my parents, but there were things. And then that's when you said it took me time to, maybe because it wasn't so harsh as what some other people have, but it was driving me anyway. It was affecting me and it was not helping me in ways with boundaries with people and all that stuff. So one thing I was wondering, talking about your childhood in, when did you start? Did you start with acting first? Was that it first?
Yes, actually.
At what age?
I think it was 14.
Do you feel like there was like a loss of childhood there? Like, have you reflected back on that? Have you grieved that at all? Has that been something?
I don't think there was.
Because you were kind of older at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody tried to get me to do anything. I didn't have a stage mom. I wanted to do it. And I can't remember how we got an agent or anything. I can't remember how that came about, but it was, I wanted to do it. And I actually feel like I had a very rich, great childhood in a lot of ways. But when I look back on it, I could see that there was a lot of craziness in my family. I guess I'm not supposed to use that word crazy because it's an ableist.
No, term. Okay, whatever. I'm not. That's like basket. Do you know you're not supposed to say basket case? Do you know why?
No.
Because that used to be a term for people who had no arms and no legs that had to be carried around in a basket.
Oh my gosh.
I'm using it forever though. Well, before you go, I just want you to know, this is the big message that I have on here, is that a loving family and a dysfunctional family are not mutually exclusive. And whether or not you want to refer to your family as dysfunctional. The other thing too, is like, it doesn't start with our parents. This shit has been passed down from generation to generation to generation. So, you know, right. The reason we talk about it is because right. We need to make sense of what are the causes and the conditions that made us the way that we are. And it's not about blaming or throwing anyone under the bus. So just know that that's the big message here. So we're not shitting on anyone's parents, but go ahead.
I did know that actually. Yeah. So I wouldn't say it was, where it would start. I mean, like I said in that quote, for me, it was, and this was sort of agreed upon in my family in a way, we have three sisters, that I'm the sensitive one. I lack self-confidence. I cry baby sometimes. Mm. I'm also very, you know, I was very prized in a lot of ways in my family. I felt like my mother was very, you know, protective.
Where do you fall in the line of the three?
I'm the third out of four.
Okay.
So
four out of four. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. So, you know, but the thing is, looking back, well, first of all, our oldest sister was very constantly dysregulated, mm-hmm. angry person, I think undiagnosed with maybe borderline personality or something like that. She is no longer living, but it was scary. I clung to the second oldest sister. She and I were very, very, very close. We were together constantly. I only wanted to be with her. I didn't really want to be in school with her. I just wanted to be with her. And she was maternal with me in a lot of ways, but we also just had a blast together. We played all the time. It was totally great. But the things that went on with my sister and what happened later, and just, I don't know, all these crises that happened that, of course, I normalized because it's just my family, but it was a lot. It was a lot. And my mother could not handle that part. And she even said to my older sister, second oldest sister remembers this, that she started to talk back or something at one age. And my mother said, I can't handle another. Mm-hmm. Patty, which was my oldest sister, that and so we all had to
walk on eggshells a little bit,
cut that down. Yeah. And but so much so that I don't even recall feeling rebellious. You know, mm-hmm. I think I learned very young, you know, maybe when I was two or something, that was not going to work to keep my mom on my side, as I needed, she needed her to be in, or she couldn't handle it. Mm-hmm. So we had to not. So yeah, then, but I internalized it all as, this is me, my issue, I'm this, I'm that. And then things like that I think about now, like, why did I mean, sure, maybe I had addiction in my genes, but why did I take this to such an extent that other people don't do? No one else in my family did. Maybe my oldest sister did, the oldest one in some ways. We didn't know a lot of what she was doing, but why did I do that from this nice middle-class family with the parents still together and mm-hmm. all those good things? Like, what? Why did I go so out there? And yes, in a weird career with the acting, I mean, there's everything is out there for mm-hmm. you, but why did I take it so far? And struggle so much. And, you know, that's what I've had to look at later in life. And then why did I go through this major depression where I had suicidal ideation and all that? And I've looked back and said, well, I think that I was sensitive to my mother's shame when she, or mm-hmm. her rejection of me or her criticism of me. And it was too scary to handle her kind of withdrawal. Like she was a withdrawal person that would just turn away from you, kind of ice you. But otherwise, I mean, we all still have this narrative of, again, my mother, and that's why I love your point about families, because it's so true that our mother was just a goddess, I mean, in so many ways as a mom. But she had this thing passed down to her where she couldn't handle her own mm-hmm. from me. And it wasn't even criticism or I don't know what it was, but I felt like I was tied to her in a certain way that maybe even my sisters weren't, for what she could accept.
What do you know about her upbringing?
Not really very much. I knew her mother, my grandma, for a while, but she was kind of a not real warm person. I think my grandfather was. I never met him, but my grandmother wasn't very warm as a person. My mother was very warm. So I don't really know. But
and the stuff with your older sister, was it very like hush hush?
It was hard to be hush hush because she was unraveling in the whole community and at school and everything. But yeah, we didn't talk about it. And I think she refused. My mother wanted her to go to therapy and she, when she, quite young, and she refused. And I think she was terrified. My other sister agrees that she thinks she was terrified that she was going to be labeled as, you know, in those days, it wasn't going to a psychiatrist was a big negative thing. It wasn't acceptance it has now. So, and I'm sure my mother blamed herself. And yeah, there was all kinds of sub things going on. But yeah, it was just whatever. We survive it. And
well, I'm curious what, because it does sound, and I can even tell, I mean, I'm sure that 5 years from now, I'd love to have you back on because I bet you'll even have more ahas and revelations and feel more comfortable talking about it and everything. But I'm curious, like, what was there a particular moment for you where you were just like, okay, like, I'll acknowledge it. There's something there. So, you know, it sounds like you fought it some, like, where was it? I mean, typically the way that this shit goes is that we're usually in some sort of pain, you know, before we're willing to kind of address something, you know, it's showing up somewhere. So if you're comfortable sharing that, I have a way of getting people to open up. I can't tell.
Okay. So this is what this is the more recent things that I remember. And I think this is when it, so I was my neighbor, the daughter of my neighbor is a massage therapist. Mm-hmm. And then she got into the somatic work. And now she does, what's it called?
Somatic experiencing?
No, she does. What's it called? Where you're like working with the brain and the body. And
like some sort of like a neuro thing?
Wait.
Reiki?
Craniosacral.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's that? Yeah. But anyway, at the time I was just, she was neighbor and she was learning. And then she would give me massages like once a week. It was this amazing for not very much money. And it was, you know, I started to pay her more and more, but it was this great gift. And so I was doing that. And there's this one time I was going through a lot of things where feeling like kind of robbed that people were taking a lot of the ideas that I've written about and put out and taking them into their own without ever crediting their sources.
They're pulling a Jay Shetty.
Oh, is that right? I don't know that.
Yeah, I guess he just, that all came out.
But they're, you know, making them into big business as parenting people and never crediting their sources, which I'm obviously a stickler for that. I mentioned Magda in almost everything I do. And it felt very scary. It felt like I'm losing something. Mm. That's mine. It's being taken from me, something. So that I went into kind of like a crisis, and I would share it with my, this bodywork person is amazing. And I couldn't sleep. This is maybe 4 years ago or something. And I stopped sleeping and just could not fall asleep no matter what, and tried everything and hated taking sleeping pills because they made me feel awful. Next day and not sleep very well. So I was pretty desperate. And she was doing work on me to try to help me. And she had sort of different recommendations that I tried, none of which were really helping. And she was working on me and she touched something like in my stomach and, or my colon or something around that area, my abdomen. And it was really hurting, really, really hurting. And anyway, it turned out, and then she found there was another thing that was like up here in my shoulder, and she started asking me about it. And I never knew then that she was doing this somatic therapy thing, but she started asking me about it. And she said, what is this making you feel like? What is this making you think? Mm-hmm. We'd never worked like that before. And I started saying, I'm like my mom and I'm a little kid. And I was remembering like a scene when I was, I think, a toddler, and not clearly remembering it, but just, I knew which room it was in. I knew, and it was there. And I just couldn't stop crying. You know, I was just like crying. Mm-hmm. And anyway, she said, yeah, you've got something here. And she said, finally, you're doing this work with me. Like, what? She said, this is the work I do. I've just never
tricked you.
She tricked me, but in a good way. And
yes.
So yeah, it was amazing. And so we had a few sessions like that where I felt like I had this, it was weird. I felt like I had this, I was like this brooch on me that was just hurting my heart. And she helped me with that.
Mm.
Not ever knowing clearly what it was, but having ideas about
mm-hmm.
thing where I was very judged and rejected by my mother or whatever.
Mm.
An incident that I had totally buried and was, but it obviously scared the crap out of me. So yeah, so she helped me with that. And then I went to somebody for hypnosis, all this stuff to try to get to sleep. But what I really had to do, I believe I ended up, that's what got me into meditation actually, which I knew your whole life you're supposed to do meditation when you get older. And like, I'd never done it. But I did start doing TEM just because I wanted to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an instigator for everything. But part of that process was me having to have like go to the depths of my, you know, suicidal depression that I'd had before. And I think my husband was away for the weekend or something. So it was actually pretty perfect in that way. But I was just sad, and so sad for like 2 days.
Breathing.
Just crying, grieving. Yeah. What had happened. And yeah, that was like a big hump to get over.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, that was my big
aha. Uh-huh.
That there's something there. And then, you know, I went through a period also very kind of angry
mm-hmm.
mom about this, that she did this to me, but you know, she was only acting out of her own feelings, I know. But yeah, it did damage. I believe that this alone did a lot of damage. And would it have damaged every person or every child? No, but it did me, because my sensitivities lined up with
mm-hmm.
and with lined up with her feelings about me. And then these sort of rejections or feeling of emotional abandonment that happened.
Yeah. What I like to say is like, you know, because a lot of people are like, well, it wasn't that bad, you know, but it's mm-hmm. not about what specifically happened to us. It's about what we came to believe about ourselves and the world as yeah. a result of what happened to us. So somebody could experience sexual abuse and somebody could experience emotional neglect and both walk away from that experience with the belief of I'm unlovable or I'm inherently flawed, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm curious from what, you know, I know that you read The Body Keeps the Score. I don't know how much you've learned about like complex trauma. Obviously you've read some of Gaber Mady's stuff. How has that influenced or changed your views on anything as far as your work?
It really hasn't changed anything. It's just, obviously created more sleep for me, created more self-acceptance for me. It really just emphasizes everything that I already learned from Magda about mm-hmm. the letting children feel however, if they're letting them be angry at you, letting them go to that feeling, which is the hardest that for most of us to handle from our child. Understanding that that's okay too. It's safe for us to let our kids feel angry, even at us, mm-hmm. and reject us and all those things, that we can know this is about them. It's not really about me. And they need to go there. For some reason, they're there and they need to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just something, you know, in my generation, nobody thought. And that's one of the big things when I started working with, you know, Magda, hearing about her approach, that I was just, oh my gosh, this is incredible. She'd say, a baby has a right to cry. It's not our job to just make it stop at all costs. Who knows what they might be expressing there? Yes, of course, you're going to take care of it. If it's about a need, you're going to try to fill that need, but not just to make them stop crying, because that feeling is not going to go away. It's going to stay there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you feel like for you personally, that anger was, because obviously because of your sister, do you think that that was one feeling that wasn't safe for you to express as a kid?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I think a lot of women have that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That no, I did not even recognize anger. I still don't really recognize anger in my life until I'm already crying and sad. And then I think, oh, that was anger, mm-hmm. probably, but I don't feel it in that way of, you know, putting it out there. I turn it right in immediately mm-hmm. onto myself.
I've noticed for myself in the past year, the anger piece has been, like you're talking about, you went through that period where you felt so angry towards your mom. You know, for me, it's, you know, my mom was an alcoholic and I'm an alcoholic. And other than the fact that she was an alcoholic, she was the most amazing mom. Like, she was an amazing mom. And so because what she suffers from is something that I suffer from, I never felt angry. You know, I never felt anger towards her. And it was an experience of about a year ago. I'm like in the midst of an emotional flashback. I'm feeling like I'm 6 years old and I'm going to die. And that anger started to come up, you know, like I didn't choose this, you know, like here I am, I'm 34 years old. I've done so much fucking work on myself already. And here I am feeling like I'm six and I'm going to die, you know, like it sucks. So it's like, it's kind of like spiritual bypassing. I wasn't doing it intentionally, but I think a lot of the times we go from the acknowledgement directly to the acceptance and forgiveness, and having those emotions in between is really what is the key. You know, you really can't get to that full acceptance unless you feel all of those emotions that you've repressed.
Yes, 100%.
Okay. What else did I just wanted to ask you? The last question is regarding repairing. Like, so one thing that I hear is that, you know, because parents are always hard on themselves, or they're lashing out their kids or do this or that, that actually like having those moments and then being able to have those moments of repair with your kid, where you're acknowledging it, that having those experiences are actually much more valuable than if you never screwed up ever. And so I'm curious what your perspective is on that.
Well, yes. Anytime that do you have kids?
No.
Sorry. Okay. A lot of people that listen to my podcast don't have kids, and that makes me feel very grateful and just mm-hmm. so happy. But kids love when every parent has tried this. It's a huge success. When you tell them, maybe it's bedtime stories or some other time, oh gosh, I did this when I was a kid. It was so, I was so embarrassed, or I was so in trouble. And they love that. They just eat it up. Because why? Because this gives me permission.
Mm-hmm.
For all the things I've done wrong that they feel maybe ashamed about, or that about, or just beat themselves up a little about, even if you didn't, you know, that they knew that they were wrong and they felt bad. And just now you've just given them this kind of green light of forgiveness for yourself. They love it. So yeah, when we can do that and it pertains to them, it's magical to, not that they necessarily feel better right away. And I do believe it's our job to keep working on it and not just say, oh, this is a great thing, I'm going to keep
messing up and saying sorry. Yeah, no.
Right. We want to keep and working on it is not beating ourselves up and not trying to get into the action that we should or shouldn't do, because that really doesn't help. It's like trying to go on the outside in instead of the inside out. Mm. The work is perspective. The work is, and that's why my podcasts, they're all about how we're seeing our child and the issue, how we're perceiving it. I'm trying to offer a lens that will help you perceive it in a way that isn't as threatening to you, that doesn't trigger you as much. So it's a practice of, and I often say, like, see this as a movie in your mind, that you're making a movie of yourself, of a different view of your child right there. That in the movie you're looking through, your child is actually very scared, and that's why they're making that mean face and saying, I hate you, or they're very hurt, or they're very, to see the vulnerability or whatever, that lens. So that's the lens that will help us to change. But yeah, in the meantime, and all the way through, because no matter what, we're always going to make some mistakes, of course, and keep going back to some of the same things, but less often. That's valid. It's all about a process. It's about a lifelong process. It's not about trying to get that perfect goal. That's not what it's for. But yeah, the more that we can cop to everything going on between us and our kids, that and everything else that we think we're not supposed to say, to actually say these things, when I realized I could do that and that it was actually the best thing to do, is so freeing as a parent to know that you could say, you don't want me to be the one, you don't want me to leave right now. You don't want me to go into the bathroom by myself. You don't want me to go away tonight to see my friends. You don't want to stay with daddy and do this. All these things that we're afraid, don't mention that, it's going to make it worse. Make it better. So it's this green, again, a green light, but for us to say all those things, all those elephants in the room, we don't have to avoid. We don't have to try to sneak around or just present everything a certain way. If we're saying to our child who's going to the doctor and maybe they're going to get a shot, you know, gosh, it can hurt. Kind of, oh, it's going to be okay.
I remember when I got the chicken pox vaccine came out when I was a kid. Oh man, I ran. I was so scared.
Yeah, but to be able to say to your child, for a child to hear your parents say, you know what, it could hurt a lot. Maybe it won't, but it might really sting for a minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, whoever thought we were supposed to say those things, but it actually helps, because now my child is prepared. Not if we're saying it in this scary way, like, well, you know, it could hurt, and we got to do this, and doctor's going to do that. We get that tone in our voice because we're anxious about it. Instead, be totally matter of fact, because we know our perspective is our child may cry and scream, and then they'll feel better and they'll stop. And it's all good. I didn't have to try to avoid that. I didn't have to do everything to make that not happen. That's not my job. My job is to help my child with life.
It's vulnerability, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, and encourage vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're apologizing. That could be our most vulnerable time with our children, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so powerful. Not just because, oh yeah, it's great. Then they learn they can forgive themselves, all those things too, but just that we're sharing, we're actually meeting them in a place of total vulnerability.
I love that. So you got a couple books. You got another one you're working on now?
Yes. So now I got a deal with Penguin Random House for my next book. And also they are republishing my previously published books. So.
Oh, both of them?
Yeah.
Are you adding to them?
Pardon me?
Are you going to add to them?
I did some updates, just a few. We may do another edition at some point, but for now we're just doing it. It's going to be really nice paper and then beautiful presentation and the same cover and everything, but just it's going to be so much nicer, and it's going to be in time for Mother's Day, if people want that. But end of this month, they will be...
The new one too?
No. The new one I'm still writing every day right now.
And then you have your podcast, and then you have a... Do you have a new course?
I have a course that I put out just about a year ago that took me a long time to make, just totally made from scratch, just exactly what I wanted it to be. And it's everything I know about the discipline aspect of this and giving all the tools that have helped me, that have helped other, all the parents I've worked with, and I think will help and have helped because I've get a lot of great feedback on it, help somebody else. So it's just, if you want that whole package with me explaining all the details about everything and knowing what to focus on. And again, it's that perspective. It's mostly about a perspective.
Well, thank you for all the wonderful work that you... I will just end with this question. Are you able to have it soak in? Are you able to appreciate, you know, the ways in which you've helped and changed and saved a lot of lives?
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, I hope you can let it soak in a little bit today right now.
So. Thank you.
It's important. I have a hard time with it too, but it's so important. Well, thank you so much for your time. I'll put all of your shit in the show notes. And we'll have a revisit when, and then you'll tell me about all of your other repressed memories that came up. No, I'm kidding. Just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Don't let